Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That's amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 338. On the podcast today, CEO of Sula Iron and Gold, Nick Worrell. Now, I speak to Nick live in Sierra Leone. Of course, I talked to him live. It's not live now. This is about an hour ago or so. It depends on when you listen to it. That's the wonder of podcasts. Their flexibility. You can listen when you want. But it's a little bit of a breakup now and again. There's a little bit of a delay as well. But Nick gives off some fantastic information. And basically, this comes from your questions. Because obviously, I do this via a crowd search. I'm crowdsourcing the questions from private investors. And he answers pretty much every question. We did have a lot of questions, so I did cut down where I thought there were duplication. But yeah, Nick covers a lot of information. And one of the questions, one of the answers, particularly broke up a little bit on his internet connection. But you can sort of decipher what he's saying. I'm going to leave it in, even though the quality is a bit poor on that one answer, because I think there's some important information in there. Talking about what I just mentioned, podcasts and stuff there, I went to visit Rob Proctor, CEO of Audio Boom in London yesterday, and I did a little record with him, only about 4 or 5 minutes. I'm going to put that on a separate podcast with Doc Holliday. I've chatted with Doc also today, and I'm going to put that out tomorrow morning, early doors before the markets open. Because I think there's so much information in Nick's podcast here and Doc's, you know, separately. I don't want to put them all in one, squash them all in one, because I think they completely hold their own in each podcast. And by the way, do you know what? I like podcasts. I like Audio Boom. Oh, yeah. I'm invested in the company, of course I'm going to say that. But I see it. The reason why you're listening to this right now, listen, I'm not going to bang on right now, it's not the point. Anyway, listen, also have today's penny stock with potential, which almost coincidentally is Kola Gold, which Doc and I chat about, which is quite good. And it's good to get an angle on this company. And they are a sort of, they've got Indian interest in gold in India, this is, and it's a very protracted planning process to apply for gold permits in India. It's hard work. It takes years and years and years and years. And so some people say now this may be changed. The new government may, you know, cut all the red tape around this. And so if it does, this stock may go through the roof. But how long does it take for a government to change policy? That's the whole thing. But they also have, you know, interest in various assets. And Rob, who suggested Kola Gold, gives a lot of information here. Thanks, Rob, for that. And also, this podcast is dedicated to G-Man, who gave me a 5-star rating and cracking review on iTunes. And that's why I'll be reading that out and dedicating this podcast to you, G-Man. Joining me on the podcast right now is Nick Worrell, Chief Executive Officer of Sula Iron and Gold. Nick, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Justin. My pleasure.
Now, we've got a lot of interest. There's a lot of private investors have sent in questions, and they're very excited about the prospects of the company. A lot of believers out there. So, for people who don't know about the company, Nick, can you give us a broad outline as to what you do, where you're based, and any points of interest that you think may be of interest to people, for new investors, maybe?
Yeah, I should be delighted, Justin. May I just say before I begin that I've got a heavy head cold, which may be coming through in my voice, and my conversation might be punctuated by a bit of sneezing or coughing, but if you and your listeners can bear with me, I'd be most grateful.
That's fine. It makes you human, Nick. It's fine.
I'm very human, Justin. I'll be delighted to take up your invitation. Sula Iron and Gold PLC is an exploration and development company focus on iron ore, gold, and coltan in northern Sierra Leone. We're a young company. We're just over 3 years old since IPO. We focus primarily on iron. The price of iron was $160, $180 a ton at that stage. And we've rapidly established a maiden mineral resource on part of our iron asset. And that was declared on the 16th of September, so I beg your pardon, 16th of December 2014. A resource of 540 million tons, average of 31.8% iron, with some high-grade oxide in the oxidized cap, which amounted to about 40, my memory serves correct, about 48 million tons. There is the potential to increase that target, but once we saw the price of iron flattening, long before the demise, sadly, of African Minerals and London Mining, we switched our focus onto gold and coal tar. We've carried out, we've carried out 12 months of exploration on the coal tar, and we're building a very comprehensive database. During that time, Ebola was in full flow in Sierra Leone and, of course, Guinea and Liberia. And SRK refused to visit, in their judgment, they made the right call, refused to visit any of those three countries because of the risk of Ebola. I did a risk assessment and delighted to tell you that I believe it was the right call because Des Condon and I, our country director in Freetown, who runs the Freetown office, and I are very much alive and kicking. And we've, as I say, amassed quite a database. We're not finished with the coltan exploration just yet. It'll be another couple of months. And I can't today reveal what those results are indicating. However, you know, and we won't know that totally until we run the exploration model and we finesse it with the prices of gold and coltan. And that'll be towards the end of the year, early part of next year. All I can say today, Justin, is it's very interesting, but I'm bound by AIM rules and regulations, and I can't give away any PSI, price-sensitive information. Going well, and after we finish this gold program, which is very exciting, then which we should finish fairly soon, and I'll put some flesh on the bones of that in a minute, if I may, we'll be finishing off the calendar year on the coltan, and then perhaps a little bit next year, more samples out. And now that we have an SRK senior metallurgist who can not only oversee the results in the UK laboratory, is prepared to travel to site as well. So, to be continued.
Excellent stuff.
To carry on, do you mind if I carry on?
Go for it. Yeah, sorry, it's a bit of a delay. Sorry. You carry on, Nick. Go for it.
Okay, well, in the last 12 months, we've carried all the preliminary exploration on our gold project, which is a mixture of geochemistry and geophysical. And we had ticks in the boxes on all of those programs. Howard Baker, our technical director, is the star of the show. He completely reinterpreted the data that was existing, and then he designed the last 12 months of data gathering, which we had never had the opportunity to be directed that way. And he then came on the ground in June of this year with Dr. Chris Bonson, who is a senior structural geologist from SRK Consulting, UK. And we produced, or they produced, and I call it we because Howard is a Sula director, in collaboration with SRK. SRK produced the current exploration target. Now I can go over the exploration target, make it as brief as possible, Justin, if you like. SRK designed an exploration target of 2 kilometers over a strike length of the ore body of 10 kilometers. And on the previous data and the exploration that we carried out, the exploration target is a tonnage range of between 5 and 7 million tons at a grade between 4 to 8 grams per ton, which equates to 0.8 million ounces and 1.5 million ounces, whether you take the lower grade range or the higher grade range. But even 4 grams a ton globally is a very high grade. We're into the exploration target. We started drilling last Thursday. We contracted with Energold, our drill contractors, to provide two rigs. And as I speak, I'm touching wood as well. Both rigs are churning out the meterage. We have, since last Thursday, have over 400 meters drilled and in the box, as we say, which is about 30% of the program. And providing we don't get a major breakdown on one of the rigs, either with the engine or the hammer, the drill hammer, which would be a slight delay, probably a week to fly another one in, then projection to finish this program is the end of this month, first week in December, which puts us way ahead of the game in terms of reporting as well. I think it's also good to mention that Dr. Paul Stenhouse, who is a colleague of Dr. Chris Bonson, a highly experienced structural geologist like Chris, very experienced in Archean Greenstone, which is our host rock. And Archean Greenstone has hosted most of the major gold deposits around the world, from Kalgoorlie to Tanzania, West Africa and South Africa. So Paul knows his stuff. And it's very interesting for me, having been in this area for a number of years, to see the Sanaman Hill, which is slap bang in the middle of the exploration target, which means in the local dialect, Kranko dialect, the Hill of Gold. A guy who named it that about 75 years ago started mining gold here. And I couple that with 21st century technology, which I'm very fond of. And to see Dr. Paul Stenhouse in the field, as he is all day, with a ruggedized tablet, which is I hadn't seen until, this week. Now, it allows Paul to input and analyze data in the field and accelerates decision-making regarding gold planning. When I say gold planning, I mean drill planning and structural interpretation, which is critical. This is industry best practice, although it's not used widely across the industry. And it's a huge benefit to us as the client, because we can actually plan. We've drilled four holes. One was close to the old Mano hole, which was the only one that intercepted good grades. So we weren't surprised when we saw all the indications. Now, the indications are massive sulfides, and the sulfides, as we found with the goldstones as part of the geochem, are associated with these high-grade golds. So what it does, it allows Paul to do that, but he can actually, now we're stepping out, away from the comfort zone, to see the models. I saw it this morning at about 6:15 on four holes, stepped out, and we see the same pattern. That enables Paul and Howard Baker to, instead of saying hole number five, which was projected maybe at the planning stage to go to 195 meters, there's no need. We can stop it at 145. We know where the most significant sulfide mineralization is likely to be. There could be some halos above and below it. What it means is that we can stop that hole at 145 meters. So that gives us 50 meters to put in the bank. So every hole we do, we save some meterage with this, the benefit of this technology, and we can drill more holes to get a better bang for our buck. And that's where the money has to be spent on the ground. So I'm delighted with all of that. I'll just have a quick sip of water and draw a breath for a minute.
It's fine. Well, you've covered a lot there, Nick. Fair play. I think I've got some questions here, and you've covered a lot of the answers there. But shall we start with the questions anyway? You may have to repeat yourself, because, like I said, you covered a lot, and I can't remember exactly everything you covered, but I'm sure there's a bit of overlap with the questions. But let's start with the question from some private investors. So I think you covered this, but just as a bullet point, in your opinion, what do you believe the company is sitting on in regards to resource for the gold?
Well, if the 2 kilometers, which is only one fifth of the known strike length of the ore body at present, if the exploration target, and it's being validated as we speak by what we see on the ground, the first batch of samples will go down to Freetown at the end of this week and then be flown over to, once they're cleared by the ministry down there, it's normally about a day, flown to ALS in over an island. If the exploration target is validated, then the 0.8 million ounces in the ground is worth $1.2 million. The 1.5 million ounces at 8 ounces a ton is worth $58.5 million. Now, a simple extrapolation, and forgive me, it is simple, an extrapolation on that over the 10-kilometer strike length would mean that the lower number, 4 million ounces, is valued at $156 million, and 7.5 million ounces would be worth $292 million in the ground. Now, that's a figure that I quote, and I take it from the people that I highly respect as the people to go to value gold in the ground. And that's a Canadian company called Cypher Research, a highly respected Canadian geological and scientific consultancy. And they're market experts in commodity valuations, particularly for M&A. They've been studying and reporting on West African gold deposits for the last 15 years. And their average median in that 15-year period is $39 an ounce. So the figures I've just quoted, Justin, are from Cypher Resources' quoted figure and what we believe to be in the ground. Obviously, it's one step at a time, and we need to completely validate and confirm SRK's exploration target. But from what we see today, we're very excited and highly encouraged.
Marvellous. Okay, next question. What's the next step with Ferrin Solar if the current drill program is successful?
The next step is we continue discussions with potential JV partners and try to crystallize them, those discussions. Alternatively, you know, we raise further money by whichever route. But the joint venture, I personally believe if this exploration target is validated with those sorts of grades, it will be little short of electrifying. And the industry is going through a hard time. Price of gold this morning was a little over $1,000, $1,090. But with West African costs from open pit, it's between $500 to $550 a ton. It's still a very viable proposition. And I would say come one, come all. And you know, we'll progress those discussions.
Okay. Yeah, sounds very exciting at the moment. Okay, next question. Sula have raised $900,000 in two places to fund 1,500 metres of initial drilling at Ferrin Solar. How much more drilling will be needed after that to define a JORC resource for the 2K strike length? And how much will that additional drilling cost, i.e. what is the shortfall in the funding?
That's a question that is not PSI, but I can't answer that today because it's one step at a time. And it will come down when, you know, when the finish of this program, the results are in, and it's then down to Howard Baker and SRK Consulting. To, this will hopefully, this will establish a maiden resource estimate. How big a program will it be to get an inferred or indicated resource? And they don't have the answer to that today, Justin, and neither do I.
Okay. Does Sula have sufficient quantities of coltan to be commercially viable?
Well, I'd refer you back to the comments I made earlier. I can't answer that.
Okay.
At this stage.
Okay, no worries. All right. Any news on the application of the IFC? I'll put the questions to you, and by all means, you know, say if you can't answer them, it's fine. But any news on the application of the IFC?
Yep, I can answer that one. We have a meeting, Des Condon and I, with the country manager in the middle of this month, middle end of this month. She's a lady, Mary. She's returned back to Freetown. However, you know, the preliminary application, and I have forewarned her by email that we may have to amend it, because if the exploration is successful and we have a viable resource, it might be bigger than we anticipated, or it might be smaller. So the actual quantum at this stage, you know, is not cast in a tablet of stone. The important thing is the money's there. It's been earmarked for countries that have been stricken by Ebola. It is available. We ticked all the boxes before, but the people who make the decision are based in Accra in Ghana. And once they make the decision, they visit sites and do their own due diligence and all that goes with it. Once their decision is made, it is tablet of stone, and it just goes to New York for rubber stamping. Well, they're available to do just that, but we don't know until we finish the model whether we have a viable resource and how big it is. Okay. And that will change the quantum.
You can just explain what this is.
However,
the
whatever that is, International Finance Corporation, a subsidiary of the World Bank.
Yeah.
International Finance Corporation. So the World Bank have earmarked, I don't know, I think it's, I should have looked this up before it came online, a significant amount of money for these three countries. And it's a soft loan, and the terms can be 10, 15, 20, 30 years. It's agreed with the decision-making committee. However, I think the most significant thing for us, for Sula shareholders, is that if we have a viable resource and we take up this and we're granted this soft loan, it will, you know, save a further dilutive effect on shareholders. And that's probably the most significant thing. Mm-hmm. But at this stage, I can't tell you any more than that. I can tell you we're meeting them. They're keen, and they want to do business, and they have this money available. But I can't tell them yet any more than I can tell you whether we have a viable mineable resource.
Okay, and do you apply for a certain amount, or do they earmark a certain amount for you? How does it work?
They usually grant a minimum of 33% of the total required and leave room for other investors that they may bring in as well. But that is not cast in a tablet of stone. It is negotiable. So again, at this stage, we don't know quantum. Mm-hmm.
Okay, next question. Can you explain how the Tier 1 negotiations are going and how long these talks have been going on? And first of all, for people who don't know, explain about the Tier 1 negotiations, please, Nick, if you can.
We are in dialogue with two Tier 1 gold producers. They are ongoing. I suppose my pause will be taken as I'm trying to hold something back, and again, I'm aware of PSI. They are ongoing, and progress is being reported back. So I suspect they may wait until the program is finished, but continuing dialogue, which is and at the end of this program, if we, you know, if more people come shape free,
sorry, you broke up then. Say that last bit again, Nick. Sorry.
At the end of this program, if more people come on approaches, charging, then the best.
Yeah. Sula applied for a $6 million loan in April, but yet shareholders did not find out this until a corporate update in September. Why was this news not passed on to shareholders before this time?
I think we were finalising the petty detail, and then Ebola got in between, and the decision-making committee could not travel to Sierra Leone. So, you know, significant progress that was reportable, you know, couldn't be made. And then as Ebola started to go down the scale before Saturday's announcement, then things eased, and it was the time to report it.
Okay. Have you started marketing the iron to Indian steel producers yet? If so, has there been any interest?
Yep. Continually in dialogue with anyone who has an interest, but you can probably suspect at this stage, with the price of iron today at $47.3 a ton, finding someone to go long on iron is not easy. It will come back. Is it going to be 6 months, 9 months, 12 months? I don't know. But I still carry on, and email people and make them let them know we're still around. And talking, we have a non-exclusive NDA with a large steel producer. But, you know, as I say, at the moment, the price falls short of profit making on the ground. Mm-hmm. It's got to be around $60-$70 a ton before it makes sense. So,
okay,
another reason why we parked it and and focused on gold and coltan.
Yeah, yeah. Are you looking to become a producer now, or are you still going to? Are you not going to sell the company? What's happening?
I've said from day one that you know, we know our place in the food chain. I think we're good explorers. We get the job done very quickly. We always come in under budget, ahead of schedule, and this will be no exception. This drilling on the exploration target for the gold. And I've seen too many of my colleagues in the industry get carried away when they have an indicator or inferred resource, and then folks start chucking $1 billion at them, and they want to become mine developers and then producers. And one, they never have the expertise, never been there and done it. And even the deep pockets soon gets thrown away. So the only exception to this would be the coltan, because it's, I don't mind telling you this, it's very close to the surface. It's only 3 feet, a meter beneath the surface. So the strip ratio is astonishing. Hardly good. It's, you know, you can probably dig more. We do the sampling with a picker. We just dig off the overburden 3 feet, pair of gravels, and, you know, literally pick them up, and that's it. The gold bar, so I'm digressing a little bit. You did say some of your audience didn't know the whole Sula story. The coltan buyer, I visited their works early June of this year, and I took some samples with me, which were crossed in their laboratory, and they matched the ALS samples. I got an increase at the time in the price of $10 a ton. They also will take the coltan as it comes out of the ground. However, there is gold contained in those gravels, which goes back to one of my prior comments about don't know quantum on the IFC loan, because that's only been discovered in the last 2 or 3 months. We need further samples to substantiate the gold grade. So we'd actually have to have a small production plant. Now, that is something that I personally have done 3 times in my life. I owned a tin mine, a gold mine in the UK, and I had a small producing gold mine out here 6 years ago. It's very small scale, and that can be done by the expertise we have in-house and by ourselves. Going on to the gold, if this MRE holds good and we go to the 10-kilometer strike length and all of that entails, all the iron ore, then that's way beyond us and way beyond our expertise. So we would look at that stage for the joint venture partner. Any joint venture partner usually has a clause in the agreement to say that it can take out the other joint venture partner, being us, for an agreed sum at that time, providing all the benchmarks are met. So in terms of the gold or the iron, we would never dream about becoming developers or producers. Coltan, different kettle of fish.
Excellent. Okay, last question, Nick, and probably a tricky one to answer, but I'll give it a go anyway, because someone sent it in. You floated at 6p. The share price is now 0.475 pence. Will those who took part in the IPO make a profit on that initial investment?
Well, they wouldn't on today's price. I mean, simple mathematics. I mean, and I was the single biggest shareholder. However, you know, we're not alone in the industry. I think every mining company across the board has suffered a swinging effect on its share price. That's the value the market places on us today. I'm not a market maker. I can't even change that. All I can do with my colleagues is to put in 100% of effort, bring these programs in, and then I hope then the market picks up on the real market value of Sula, which is considerably more than 0.4 pence. I would add, as an anecdote, this is the first time since 2006 that our industry has gone below $1 trillion, which is significant. It's now worth, the whole entire industry globally is now worth less than the combined worth of Google and Apple together. So these are tough times, and I suspect some companies will go to the wall, some majors and some mediums. But it'll be, you know, that natural culling. Mm. And only the fit and lean and mean will survive.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And you're amongst those.
I'd also add, I am. And we've survived so far, and I believe we will carry on surviving and doing very well. Yeah. I'd rather be an explorer right now than a producer. Mm-hmm. Having said that, nothing unites shareholders, and I'd be delirious if our share price was much higher. Yeah. Ultimately, we're in a position to declare a JORC resource. It'll be the price that we sell for and not the price today. And we'll be judged on that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent, Nick. Well, that's it. All that's left to do, if you can, sell me. Give me three bullet points, quick points, really, on why I should invest in your company.
We have an iron resource which is JORC compliant. It's a significant size, significant grade. The price of iron will come back. If it doesn't, we just all pack up and go home today, because there'll be no construction, civil or industrial, no military, nothing at all. There's no substitute for iron, no plastic. You can't build buildings with plastic. So the price of iron and the demand for iron, and it's a fallacy to think that Rio, Vale and BHP will continue to supply the world's demand for iron out of Brazil and Australia. So the price of iron will come back. That's a compelling reason in itself. We've got the excitement now of gold. Now, I know I'm a gold bug, unashamedly. We've now got a very, very exciting exploration target from SRK, and they don't give those away lightly. And we're pursuing it, and we'll finish it by the end of this calendar year. And if it's anything like the exploration target that is validated, then we're sitting on, you know, a very sizable, high-grade deposit. That's compelling. The coltan and gold story is to be finished. It's not quite finished yet, but I can't say any more about that. And I think the great thing about Sula is that we have a suite of three minerals, and we managed to switch from iron to this high-grade gold. So I think there are three, and I think we've got a fine management team. Howard Baker is preeminent in the field of geology. SRK, you know, great professional advisors and a terrific team here on the ground. I'm very proud of them.
Lovely, Nick. I think you've covered off everything there.
Justin, yeah. People make a business, mm-hmm. not money.
Yeah, exactly. Nick, do you know what? Lovely to chat to you. Like I said, you covered off every point possible there. And anyone who didn't know about your business now thoroughly knows it, back to front, pretty much. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Nick. And please do come on again when you have some further news to share with us.
I'll be delighted, Justin, and thank you very much indeed.
Okay, today's penny stock with potential is suggested by Rob. Thanks, Rob. What's the name and ticker symbol of the company you are suggesting? And it's Kola Gold. The ticker is KGLD. What does the company do? Kola Gold is a partner and investor in an Indian gold exploration and mine development company, and is also pursuing a number of gold projects in India. Now, you know, gold is a culturally huge symbol in India, but they import a lot of gold, you know, and that's the whole point. And like I said earlier, it's a protracted sort of planning process in India to try and get a gold mine away. So they import a lot of gold, but that process of applying for permits may start to ease up. They may try and ease the planning process there. We'll see if that happens. Anyway, would you say this is a short, medium, or long-term investment? A medium-term investment, but could be short-term punt, as news is pending regarding drilling results and anticipation of one of the most prospective, underdeveloped gold prospects in the world. How many shares does the company have in issue? 106.29 million. Nice accuracy, I like that. What's the current price and market cap of the company? Now, this has changed quite drastically. It did have a... I saw the stock really bottom out. It dropped massively one day, and I think it's just because of a big seller there. I don't know who it was, but no fundamental reason, but a big seller came in. I think that's what it was, but the share price suggested it was 1.45, market cap 1.54. Now that's gone just below a penny. It's 0.975, I think. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, the company has 24% investment in Geomysore Mining Services, or GMSI, in India, valued at $2.83 million. However, Collar Gold at present is valued only just over 1.3 million cash the company has in the bank, which underpins the share price. So there's very little downside to an investment in Collar Gold. Yeah, well, even more so even now, because it's dropped off just below a penny. The GMSI has rights to 32 gold mineralized project areas totaling 12,568 square kilometers, and has 710,000 ounces of gold JORC resource, and is looking to upgrade and extend this in a very near future with the recent 15.8-kilometre drilling campaign. And number three, Collar Gold is jointly pursuing the acquisition and revival of the historic BGML gold mine in Collar Goldfields in Karnataka. The BGML gold licence has produced 25 million ounces of gold at 15.9 grams per tonne over 120 years and is one of the most prospective, underdeveloped, Archean greenstone belts in the world. So, do you know what, Rob? You've done your homework there, fella. That's why I like this feature. You know, there's people out there. I don't know, Rob, if you're a private investor or if, you know, do this for a living. But that was full of information. Go to sharepickers.com to see that. And even starting your research there is a cracking start. Thank you very much, Rob, for that. I appreciate it. Muchos appreciados. And like I say, if you know of a penny stock with potential, please suggest it here at sharepickers.com. Just click the link and fill in the three bits there. Let's see if you can get as much detail as that, because that was cracking. That's exactly what I'm after. That's why I set this feature up, for stuff like that. That is good, Rob. Very good. I'm very impressed. I'm bowing before your feet, your golden slippers you're wearing from the Collar Goldfields area. And that's it for the podcast today. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, tomorrow I've got a special out with Doc Holliday there. I've got a little clip with Rob Proctor, the CEO of Audio Boom. He's at the start of that. Then me and Doc chat for a long time. You know? Long time, love you, yeah? So we chat about everything from Twitter, because he's not on Twitter anymore, to stocks he likes. But that's it, apart from the dedication. And I've got to say, this podcast is dedicated to G-Man, who gave me a 5-star rating and this cracking review on iTunes. It's G-Man says, G, that's all he's got for the title of this review. G, 5 stars. I now have over 103 5-star reviews. It's going in the right direction, yeah? Enjoy listening to your podcast. I've migrated from Radio 2. This is why I like podcasts. This is it. And if you've done that, this is why the power is in the podcaster's hands. I keep saying this over and over again. Listen. Listen to this. This is what I think. I say it again, I'll repeat it again. I'll say this every day until people get it. We now watch TV on demand. We didn't 20 years ago. We had to watch what was on, when it was on. Now, I don't watch anything unless I've downloaded it or it's on or catch up or whatever. Hardly ever am I a slave to the schedulers, you know, BBC One or ITV or Sky or whatever. I watch what I want. Radio will be doing the same thing. It's just a little tweak, you know, when you can basically, in a couple of years' time, you will be able to listen to this podcast by pressing number one, hopefully, on your preset on your radio. That's the way it's working. How? Because cars will be connected to the internet. Of course they will. It's like now they have sat navs. They'll be connected to that by the internet. Simple as that. It will happen. And podcasts will be as accessible as your local maniacs on your local FM license, the boy and a girl who's chatting about showbiz. And they will drop out of favour, because you can listen to subjects you want to listen to, not the antics of some D-list celebrity who they find very amusing, or Big Brother on Channel 5. Who cares? You know? That's why podcasts will take off in the next, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 or 5 years. Like, I can't put a time range on it. All I'm saying is it will take off. Full stop. Anyway, G-Man, thank you very much. Enjoy listening to your podcast. I've migrated from Radio 2. Buy wholesale, protect your capital and define your exit. Then go shopping. Toys, keep up the good work. G-Man, thank you very much, G-Man. I do appreciate that. And by all means, if you want the podcast dedicated to you, please go to sharepickers.com, click the link through the iTunes, and you can do that there. Give me a nice review, and I'll read it out, and the podcast will be dedicated to you. Thank you very much for listening. Much appreciate us.
The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.